Those are the sounds of ferries crisscrossing the bay. They land at terminals including Oakland's Jack London Square and San Francisco's Ferry Building. Both are tourist destinations, and both are built on landfill. In fact, practically all of Oakland and San Francisco's bayfront shoreline is constructed, built up to accommodate metropolitan growth. It seems permanent, concrete and steel, roads and buildings, but it's not. Scientists say sea level rise will change the way our waterfronts look within the next century, and maybe even sooner. And that's why developers consult with people like Robin Grossinger. Grossinger is a scientist at the San Francisco Estuary Institute, where he directs the Historical Ecology Program. Essentially, he's a historical sleuth, unearthing and deciphering old maps, stories, and landscapes to figure out what California looked like before European contact. And Bay Area planners use his work to build smarter, more sustainable developments. Robin Grossinger was recently honored by the Bay Nature Institute as its Environmental Educator of the Year. He dropped by our studio to talk with KALW's Ben Trefney about building in harmony with nature.
Well, it's almost every place we've looked. I mean, that's one of the interesting things is that you realize most of us here didn't. If we grew up in California, I have grown up here since I was 9, but I don't have grandparents and, you know, great-grandparents who told me about the history of the landscape. We're all kind of making it up as we go along, and people often wonder what it used to look like. So there is the risk in these restoration efforts that we might kind of mythologize or import ideas, you know, from the East Coast or the Midwest of what a river should look like.
You make a great river there, like right through the middle of Marin County, and there never was one there in the first place.
Yeah, and maybe that's okay if it's going to work, but it probably won't work out that well because many things are still the same. It's still, you know, still a Mediterranean semi-arid climate. Topography is still the same. The soils are still the same. So there's plenty of ways to get it wrong, but pretty much everywhere we go in, it is a slight surprise, like what we find. For example, scientists in the Bay Area didn't really realize how many beaches there were in the Bay. You need to think about beaches on the outer coast of California, but we had almost 30 miles of beaches in the Bay, and those were even popular for, you know, all the reasons beaches are popular up into the 20th century, but then they were all filled and pretty much gone and forgotten.
Filled as landfill to build properties.
Freeways built out, you know, landfill for airports and, you know, downtowns and all the, you know, important things of progress. But interesting thing is then when you look more closely, we found that a lot of beaches have come back. In the meantime, they kind of rebuilt themselves. The processes are still there, you know, of tides and water and
depositing sediment.
And so you have a number of new beaches, you know, 7, 8, 10 miles of beach that's come back in similar patterns and size and orientation, but different spots, right? Because it's adjusting and accommodating to the built environment. And then
where's that happening?
Throughout the Central Bay, parts of Berkeley and Albany and San Francisco and Marin. And then an interesting thing is that scientists looking at sort of the historical characteristics and then how what the beaches today look like, have started designing new beaches that might be strategically brought back or sort of recreated to provide habitat for some species and then also sea level rise buffers. You know, provide, you know, a kind of natural buffer against, you know, some of the challenges that we'll face. It'd be nice to have beaches actually bordering our communities, providing a little bit of protection.
And that's something that the natural environment might have had there in the first place. It ended up protecting the land inside, but wetlands and beaches have dissipated over time.
Right. So we realize we can actually draw upon these historical examples to design the landscapes of the future and actually get back some of the functions that we might actually like to have.
That's Robin Grossinger. He's senior scientist at the San Francisco Estuary Institute, where he's also director of the Historical Ecology Program. So you have a book that's coming out. It's Napa Valley Historical Ecology Atlas, Exploring a Hidden Landscape of Transformation and Resilience. What's something in the Napa Valley that is completely the same as it was 200 years ago based on your research? And what's something that's utterly different?
One remarkable example of persistence is an oak grove that we were lucky enough to get to visit on a private property in the Oak Knoll area, the Lamoureux family. So it's a rare place in the valley. The valley was covered with great oak trees, great valley oaks, an oak savanna, and it was really, everyone was just blown away by the beauty of this quote-unquote park-like landscape, the grand trees. And there really are no other examples in the valley of a bigger grove, though. There's individual trees remaining. And so this place is really quite a beautiful spot, and you get kind of this feeling of being in a cathedral of oaks, these incredibly big trees and a whole world of bird life up above. And then, bizarrely enough, we went to the archives about years after taking a photograph of that spot and found a photograph of that same spot that had been taken in 1907, almost exactly 100 years, almost to the day before our photograph. And it looks almost the same. You can see the same leaning tree. You can see the same mix of trees, although a few fewer trees, but you can see the same feature persisting through time. So those points are real reminders that we do live in a landscape and that these processes are pretty strong. They don't just suddenly go away. So what about on the opposite side? Well, I think one of the striking things on Napa River, as well as pretty much most every other river we've studied in California, is how even when it looks pretty natural, like, you know, a sinuous river with trees alongside it, a curvy river, how different that is from how it used to be. In Napa, there are places that, you know, the river looks somewhat natural, but it turns out it's incised, it's cut down 20, 25 feet and used to flow through wetlands and willow groves in a particular spot. So maybe used to have a broad zone of wetlands, channels and complexity that was maybe thousands of feet wide, and now it's just a narrow little strip.
Yeah, as you talk about that, I imagine rivers that I've seen, whether they're large or small, but they're all pretty contained. The wetlands surrounding rivers doesn't exist in too many places that I see. Almost they're always creeks or channels or rivers, but they end up resembling some sort of a canal.
That's exactly right. I think you know, one of the things that's hard to see in our contemporary landscape is how homogenized these systems have been. Even when they look slightly natural, they've been so simplified and sort of restricted in terms of how they express themselves. And so a lot of the effort in this, in our work and in this book, is to show the complexity and the diversity of the landscape, how different habitats express themselves and the complexity. And that's important because that complexity is what provided the biodiversity and the resilience, really, to variations in climate, floods and droughts, the real ability to respond to different climatic events, and you know, it is a lot of what we've lost in landscape today.
Of course, those rare climatic events aside, I mean, they do happen, obviously, the regular floods and that kind of thing. It's a lot easier to build a community around a controlled river than to build it all on stilts on a wetlands.
That's right. We're not going to go all the way back. But the interesting thing is that, you know, many flood control agencies, or at least some nowadays, are finding that their communities want something in between. They don't necessarily want an engineered concrete flood control channel. They still would like some flood protection, but they're often willing to give a little bit of land and have something that is more aesthetically appealing and actually safer and more ecologically functional. So Napa River is a great example where they've done a living river approach to flood protection, and they've used wetlands and widening the river corridor to gain a lot of flood capacity for the city of Napa. So it's, you know, the idea of natural flood protection, which is also being applied in Santa Clara Valley, is, you know, has a lot of potential to, you know, bring back elements of these systems, still with while providing flood protection. And the, you know, and the interesting thing is that, of course, you know, a lot of the engineering that happened in the 20th century is not going to last forever. It has maybe 50-year lifespan, 75-year lifespan. So a lot of the work that was done to kind of bring nature under control in the 20th century has to be redone in the 21st century. We sort of have a second shot at many of these things. You can see the Bay Bridge is being rebuilt. Salt ponds are turning over. A lot of the landscape is flexible and dynamic. It continues to change.